Rob Kirby, macroeconomic analyst, formerly worked at Bank of Nova Scotia. Welcome back.
Pleasure to be with you, Chris.
Wanted to start off today, if we could, with some of the interesting work you've done. You arrange gold sales between buyers and sellers, not by the ounce, by the ton. And you noted that clients are very concerned about the greenback. Tell us more.
People in the world who have had enough of dollars and whose reserve accounts are full of dollars are looking for ways to diversify the reserves and are seriously in the business of acquiring as much physical gold bullion as they can in the name of diversification. This has been ongoing for the past decade and a half at least, and I expect it to continue and the demand for physical gold bullion to heighten as we move forward.
Since the presidential election, people have gotten nervous, and you've gone on record saying that an enormous tonnage of paper gold was unleashed on the market, something like 8,000 tons. I mean, you know, at least on paper, that's close to the entire U.S. Federal Reserve and Treasury Department's reserves of gold.
Sure. Well, that amount was expelled into the paper markets in the 3 days following the election. In the single day after the election, it was close to 6,000 metric tons that were sold, which is basically 2 years of global mine supply pushed into the market in paper form in basically 24-hour period. So this I view personally as an act of desperation on the part of monetary authorities around the world to make gold on paper exchanges anyway look like the not to go to asset that it really is. So I view it as an act of desperation, and to me it means long-term bullishness for the metals in general.
You're on the same show with John Embry this week from Sprott Asset Management, that this is one of the tightest times they've seen on record. This could be, if you will, setting the launch pad for really exciting fireworks ahead.
Chris, if we look at the actions as opposed to the words and opposed to the phony price discovery that we see either on the COMEX exchange or the LBMA, the London Bullion Market Association, which is London-centric for the European market, where the bulk of the world's gold is really traded, at least in paper form. But if we look at the actions of the globalists, and I like to reference the globalists when I speak in terms of attacks on the precious metals. The globalist entity has a captive person in one of the world's biggest demand centers for gold, which is India. India is basically accepted to be around the world as the world's largest consumer of physical gold bullion. And actions that have been taken in India in the last couple weeks at their annual highest demand period, which is a festive season in the fall in India, where buying and giving of gold, physical gold, in jewelry form or in small denomination form is extremely high. The government in India, in a shock move, outlawed the use of 500 and 1,000 rupee banknotes. And you see, the vast majority of physical gold that gets transacted in India is done so with physical bank notes, namely and expressly the 500 and 1,000 rupee bank notes. These notes have now been outlawed, as in they cannot be used as legal tender, and new notes have been rationed to the marketplace, as in people cannot just freely go to the bank and exchange the old notes for the new ones that are being brought in. This has been an absolutely premeditated attack on trying to quash physical demand for gold in India at the highest point of demand season. This is the action of the globalists and the deep state. This has been written up in a very brilliant article by Sean Doherty, and I would recommend that anybody listening to this Google the name Sean Doherty and read the piece that he has put together on Indian gold demand and how the globalists have quashed or attempted to quash physical gold demand in India. This is another sign of desperation on the part of the globalists to try and curb gold demand because they're up against the wall and they don't have the product.
You hit the nail on the head. Look, we just talked to John Embry. He notes that the person behind Modi's decision, that's Prime Minister Modi at India, move to a de facto digital currency in a nation where 89% of transactions are typically through paper currency or coins. Compare that with 30% in North America. But here's the person behind the scenes, a former Wall Street executive appointed as the head treasurer in India, according to John Embry, and he's the one pulling Modi's strings here. With the help, obviously, of Rob Kirby and John Embry, we get the big picture. And by the way, we're going to put up links to Doherty's article. You can just click that link when you hear our voices today and read the article that he's referring to. The powers that be see something coming. The deep pockets around the planet, they're bracing for the inevitable economic calamity right around the corner. Michael Snyder at Economic Collapse just noted the wealthy are building underground bunkers in anticipation of post-dollar world and an apocalypse.
It's going to be extremely relevant and will have severe impact on the value of the dollar and on the state of the U.S. debt markets, because I don't think the world is going to be revelations that, in my view, are absolutely going to come to light in the very near future regarding the seediness of leadership. We're speaking about the rise of Donald Trump to the president-elect status in America with his winning the election on November 8th. What this uncontrollable person who has basically taken the Republican Party over in a coup, at least in my view, that's what's occurred there. He has the globalists basically wrong-footed in that one of their chosen disciples is not at the control station pulling the levers on policy going forward in the United States of America. And this has created a severe roadblock to the globalist agenda, which is the usurping of national sovereignty in countries who are signatories to trade pacts, which really aren't about trade at all. It's about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and whether it's the TPP or the NAFTA, these treaties are all designed to usurp sovereignty of the signatories and not to promote trade, as we have been led to believe by politicians who are in the pockets of globalists. This is quite evident when you start getting into the minutiae of the economic data behind the headlines that were given with such gleeful abandon, for instance, we had a better-than-expected GDP report yesterday reported in the United States of America, and all I can say to anybody who wants to stick their nose into the trough and do some of the dirty work, you will see that while we trumpet headline numbers on GDP being higher than expected, these headlines are not consistent with freight traffic in the United States, which is anemic. And I'm just citing commentary by a chap by the name of John Williams of shadowstats.com, who reverse engineers all of the government sponsored and government produced data and gives us a more accurate reflection of what's happening in reality. If GDP is as robust as officialdom would have us believe, freight traffic would be up, it's down. Petroleum use is down. Corporate revenues are anemic. And broad employment numbers, while they're reportedly very robust, they're anemic. because what they've done with the employment data over the years is they've stopped counting people who can't find jobs as being unemployed. And you see, when you start doing that, and when you start compromising your benchmarks and your the way you measure things, you're really throwing hope to the wind. So, you know, the reality of the world we live in versus what we are told by officialdom are two completely separate things. And all I can say to you, Chris, and people listening, is that this is borne out in the, let's just say, in the ratings of the mainstream financial press, which are absolutely in the toilet, and the trust factor, because there are people around that measure these sorts of things, people, you know, how much trust or belief people have in the mainstream reporting mechanism, which is at an all-time low and still sinking. So, you know, and we've seen the rise of the alternative press, which is, you know, the type of transmission that you're listening to right now, and others, Chris. So, I mean, the words we get from officialdom do not jibe with measurable things in reality.
One of my favorite mathematicians, Paul Erdős, the late Paul Erdős, used to say, a problem worthy of attack proves its worth by fighting back. We're seeing the lamestream media fight back, calling us now, what is the latest moniker? A sophisticated, I have news for them, we're not sophisticated, a sophisticated Russian propaganda tool.
But we seem to have a new, talking point every day. I mean, the mainstream press, Chris, to put it very, very bluntly, the mainstream globalist entity is collectively crapping their pants right now because of Trump's election. They are doing everything in their power to delegitimize his election with the getting recounts in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, which coincidentally, if they all happen to be successful in reversing Trump wins in those three states, would take away enough electoral college votes to put him under the threshold needed to become president. And, you know, this is not by coincidence that this has occurred. And let it be known that the states in which the recounts are being attempted, there were states that Hillary won by smaller margins than Trump won the three name states, where no recounts have been ordered at all. This is just so raw and rank perversion of reality, and such a raw and rank attempt at trying to reverse or delegitimize an election that I've ever heard of or could conceive of.
Hey, what would you expect from the swamp? Raw and rank. Shifting the discussion back to the precious metals, you know, you're talking about 540 claims for every ounce of gold at the COMEX against it. So we're talking about leasing here where the metal isn't there. We've heard this from Ron Paul and many others regarding our Fort Knox, our gold, supposedly a reserve gold, up to 10,000 tons. What do we need to keep in mind with regard to gold leasing, and what does that potentially mean for the market?
Well, gold leasing allows central banking to create, call it phantom gold. You see, it's through gold leasing, and this was first exposed by a chap by the name of Frank Veneroso in the mid 1990s. And Frank Veneroso had a good friend, his name was Terry Smeaton, at the Bank of England, who was in charge of the gold depository at the Bank of England. And back in the mid to late 90s, it was Terry Smeaton who, in speaking with Frank Veneroso, he started talking to Frank about how banks were, central banks or countries were leasing a whole lot of gold. And procedurally, what happens when countries lease gold, the gold comes out of the vault, the gold is sold into the market, and the country receives the proceeds of the sale of the gold to their, you know, or spend in their general revenues. And in place of the physical gold that left the vault, an IOU is put there, but it's counted on the same line as gold present in the vault. So in this way, you can make your gold, a physical gold depository, look much bigger than what in reality is sitting there on the floor. It's called double counting. And if you want to think this through a little bit, if you lease it to, if party A leases it to party B, and then party B leases it to party C, and then party C leases it to party D, you can actually make one lump of gold look like four lumps of gold the same size. When in fact, you know, all you really have is a paper IOU there. Now, the IMF it's the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements, they acknowledge that this double counting occurs, and yet they do nothing to force or make their members compliant in doing anything on the accounting line about this. So this is organized deception. And basically organized thievery, and it's how national treasuries around the world have their gold looted from them, or looted from the people, because sovereign gold is an asset of the people.
This just reminds me of Frank Portnoy's late 1990s fiasco. If any of my listeners haven't read it yet, he laid this all out with the derivative scam and nightmare that was headed our way almost 10 years in advance. And I know you cut your teeth in the derivatives market as well. Our gold is leased out on one side of the balance sheet. Then we move over to the other side of the balance sheet, and we've got a fractional reserve currency system, which bases money on nothing. That seems like an algorithm for disaster. Tell us why.
It's an algorithm for disaster because it is by definition, Chris, a Ponzi scheme. It is literally the definition of a Ponzi scheme, where you make promises to people, and you have nothing tangible to back up the promises. You know, this is the model that the COMEX exchange and the London Bullion Market Association, the LBMA, this is the model that these organizations are built on. They have no product to sell to justify their corrupt price discovery mechanism, which is namely the purchase and sale of futures contracts, which are promises of gold and or silver. They don't have the physical product to make good on the sales of these empty contracts. But we are all supposed to believe that, you know, that the price of gold is what their paper trade is reflective of.
You've kicked the cover off the ball. I mean, look, we've got, as you say, in India, at just the peak moment, I think the Festival of Lights coming up and the wedding season kicking into gear. This is the time when traditionally metals are in high demand for ceremonies and things of that nature. Of course, then we also have here in the United States, we have our holiday season coming up. Jewelers and manufacturers, you know, they're starting to increase their supplies. What happens, Rob, if the elite get their way and the whole world follows this trend of a paperless society where we go digital and they have total control over every transaction? And would it not then be much easier to put in some type of taxing system on the yellow metal that none of us would be too happy about? We'd be forced to be involved in.
Yeah, well, let's cut right to the chase here, Chris. The goals of the globalists are to have one world currency, digital, one world government, which is basically not elected and not representative of the people who will be subject to it, and one world religion, which is the worship of state itself. This globalist planetary agenda envisions the global population, instead of being 7 billion people that currently reside on the planet, they have a plan for the planet where the population is 500 million. So they're basically planning on a go-forward basis the offing of 6.5 billion of us. And they refer to us colloquially as useless eaters. And those are the words of none other than Henry Kissinger in white papers from the 60s and 70s. This is what their plan is, and their plan is wrapped up in a word. It's called eugenics. And at the center of eugenics, the whole principle of eugenics is very consistent with the proliferation of GMO food, vaccines, which are causing, massive amounts of, planned for, reactions, you know, with the rise of so many diseases that used to be exotic and used to be very, very uncommon have now become very, very common with the proliferation of vaccines, which could be made clean but aren't by design.
You've pulled the lid off the genie's bottle here. Recent years, I decided to go back to school, and I was forced into these batteries of vaccinations. Middle-aged man taking these vaccinations that were probably designed for young folks. Nevertheless, I developed pseudo mumps all over my back in the area where these jabs were given. And can you imagine what that would do to a 6-week-old, a 6-month-old, a 1-year-old? It destroys the immune system. And that's why autism, as you said, is off the chart. We refuse to let our 3-year-old have any of those jabs until after the age of 2, which, of course, reduces the chance of autism. Just what will happen if they get their way? Okay, what happens if all of these plans that you're talking about come to fruition?
Well, if they come to fruition, we see a dramatic reduction in the population. And the other nasty side effect to a lot of these things, let's just say GMO foods and the vaccination regimes, is that fertility rates have declined. There have been tests done, and officialdom knows this, but there have been tests done where they feed a rat GMO corn, a diet of exclusively GMO corn, and within 90 days, they render the rat infertile, cannot reproduce.
Georgia Guidestones completely outlines everything you've said here. They want a 90% at least reduction. They don't want more than 500, I think it is 500 million people.
The number.
Yeah, so they want, that's more than 95%. And of course, now we all know this goes back to, as you say, eugenics. It's irksome. You see, Darwin never said survival of the fittest. He implied survival of the most adaptive.
We're talking about a group of elitists, which I refer to as the globalists, and the globalists feel that, you know, they have the God-given right to make these decisions on behalf of humanity, because they feel that they are intellectually and morally superior to all the rest of us. And I mean, this is what humanity is confronting. This is what is at the center of the, let's just say, the ruckus that's now occurring in America with the election of Donald Trump. You see, if we haven't spelled it out clear enough for the listeners, Chris, Donald Trump was not the globalist candidate. And the globalists had control of everybody else in the Republican field that ran against Donald Trump. And as a result of Trump breaking through and winning not only the Republican leadership, but then winning the presidency, this is a manifestation, by the way, of nothing but populism. And had Donald Trump not been the figurehead of this movement, the movement still would have occurred, and there would have been another man that would have filled that slot. I would suggest the odds that he may be being lined up for a tragic fall, or he may be being lined up for an assassination. You know, we the Electoral College in America does not meet until December 19th. I think we're at a very, very dangerous point in it's bigger than American history, because it's a very, very dangerous point in human history, because the implications where it stands with Donald Trump, I think it's not just about America. This whole anti-globalist thing is a movement which is global. It was first manifested with the Brexit vote, where Britain voted to not be part of the euro. And I mean, on December 4th, we have Italy conducting their own referendum as to whether the Italians are going to stay engaged with the euro. So this is not a movement just in America. It's not a movement just in Britain. This is a global movement, and it's the rise of populism. And what it really symbolizes, Chris, is the little people rising up against the globalist interests who basically have it in for us. And you know what? It's high time it happened. And for the sake of humanity, I hope it continues.
I'd like your thoughts on Jim Rickards, former collaborator with the CIA, DOD. He's talking about a financial crisis on the Lilliputians that I think you've referred to, not the we, the cronies, but he's talking about the global elites have a secret plan for a financial crisis. Do you suspect or do you agree with the statement that they're waiting for December 19th for unleashing the Kraken on these markets?
I wouldn't be at all surprised if that were to be the case, that a financial crash, which in my view should have already occurred, is being prevented from happening until the day, if as and when, Donald Trump is installed or inaugurated as President of the United States. With regards to Mr. Rickards, I believe, is a conflicted personality. Because Mr. Rickards is basically one of the, at least in my view, is one of the globalist go-to boys, and basically a Mr. Fix-It. If you read a CV of Rickards and his past accomplishments, you will see things on there. You know, he seems to be a practicing attorney, a hedge fund manager, an author. He was a hostage negotiator in the Islam, you know, when hostages were taken back in the late 70s in Iran with the Islamic Revolution. He was the chief counsel for long-term capital management, if any of you remember that name. And long-term capital management just happened to have had as one of their biggest clients the Central Bank of Italy. And the Central Bank of Italy did lease gold and took the proceeds from the leased gold and invested that money with long-term capital management. Long-term capital management then leveraged the proceeds that they had under their administration. They leveraged them up, made a huge bet on Russian bonds, which defaulted, and they lost the money. And you see, in the late 90s, Italy's finance ministry was being run by one Mario Draghi, who is currently the head of the European Central Bank, but he in a former life he was the Italian finance minister, and he was coached by none other than Goldman Sachs, their financial advisor, to lease their stagnant asset gold and invest the proceeds with a can't miss at long-term capital management. Because, after all, long-term capital had Nobel laureates who were managing the money. And how could anything go wrong when you're investing with Nobel laureates? Guess what? They lost the money, and Mr. Rickards was appointed to do a secretive workout of long-term capital's fall from grace. And had there been a public workout, it would have been revealed that the Bank of Italy was short a whole pile of gold that they had leased, and they had now lost the money, and this would have thrown Italian finances into a position where Italy would not have qualified for the euro under Maastricht Treaty guidelines, and the euro would have been stillborn. But that didn't occur, because Mr. Rickards, acting for the globalists, wasn't going to allow that to become public knowledge. And he did everything in his power to cover that up. And Mr. Rickards, while he does speak and does issue some kernels of truth, Mr. Rickards speaks with a forked tongue. And Mr. Rickards is not to be trusted because he has dual agendas.
I'd like to wrap up with one of your comments on China, this idea that they may have more gold than they're disclosing officially, and that the West thinks your number, which seems outlandish at first look, your number, your guesstimate on just what the People's Bank of China might be holding in their vaults is identical to Dr. Stephen Leeb, one of our favorites here on the show. You both came up with a figure, I'm sure independently, that China could have as much as 30,000 tons of gold. That would be three times the United States, and it would be an enormous stockpile reminiscent of, the movie Dune. Give us an idea of how this could be devastating.
Chris, if China holds 30,000 metric tons of sovereign gold, China would be in a position at a time of their choosing to back their currency with gold. And if China were to back their currency with gold, the dollar standard would disappear overnight. And this would precipitate a tsunami of dollars returning to America, and very most likely would touch off a hyperinflationary event. The ramifications are very large with regard to China and how much gold they actually possess.
Again, the implications profound, because I think you're understating it here a bit, but I mean, it would certainly put China as the de facto reserve currency nation with the yuan and the renminbi. And of course, you would then see an unraveling, maybe even a tsunami of dollars returning to North America. You've got a great website packed with information. Any other contact info today?
Yeah, actually, you can find me on the web at kirbyanalytics.com. That's my home on the web. I guess my parting comment would be to anybody, if you're going to be involved in the precious metals sector, my wish would be for everybody to get physical and think first about owning and holding physical bullion.
We want everyone to have not just a modicum, but a solid core position in physical metals. I'm not talking some ETF with rehypothecated bullion. You could wake up tomorrow and find out we've gone to a fully digital currency.
Gonna just add the comment, if you can't touch it, you don't own it.
That's all you need. And if you've got that gold, you've got bags of silver coins, they'd have less control over you. Rob Kirby, you got to come back to the show soon.
Pleasure being with you, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned, with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.